Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Unlimited podcast, where you get to learn everything you want to know about addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Angela Pugh, co-founder of Kansas City Recovery, life coach, and recovering alcoholic. To learn more about me, you can listen to episode zero on your podcast app or find us on the web at addictionunlimited.com. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Addiction Unlimited podcast. I'm your coach, Angela Pugh, helping you get that sober life you want. Thank you for spending some time with me today and listening to the pod. I'm bringing you another great guest with another great sober community, online community. Let's welcome Courtney Anderson to the show. Courtney, why don't you take a minute and just let everybody know a little bit about you and what you do?
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Angela, for having me on today. I'm a wife. I'm a mother to our little cat, Fiona, and I'm also a bartender.
Yay! Sober bartenders.
I am a sober bartender too. You know, it's when I tell people that, when they're like, you don't drink? And I was like, no. And then I tell them, I'm like, yeah. And I'm also a bartender. They just look at me and dumbfounded, like, how can a recovering alcoholic be a bartender? So that's me. You know, I live in the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan, and I have been sober now for 7.5 years, and I love it.
Nice. Yeah, me too. So how do you feel? I get to ask somebody else this now because everybody asked me for years, how do you feel being a bartender and not drinking? Like, have you ever felt like being behind the bar was a trigger for you?
So when the last night that I drank, I was working because I was transitioning. I was leaving that job. I was leaving the restaurant business, the bartending job. You know, I had been in that for a long time of my life. So I was finally transitioning and going into the medical field because that's what I thought I wanted to do for so long. So it was my last night of work. Got hammered, of course, like so many nights before. And I was out of the business for 2 years. And then my friend who was working with me at the bar reached out to me. We were still friends. She was managing the place and asked me if I wanted to come back and do a couple days a week. And I thought about it. So by this time, I'm 2 years into my sobriety. I did say, well, I'll come back one day a week because I'm not working 7 days a week. You know, I had my Monday through Friday job, 40 hours a week. And at that time, my husband, he proposed to me and I was like, the money, this extra money will be good for our wedding. So I went back to waitressing just one day a week on Saturdays, just during the day. And I will tell you, I had a lot of fear going back into it.
Yeah.
I had more anxiety. So fear and anxiety mixed into it of going back into that environment where I was, because, you know, I had people telling me, and this is what you have, this is where it's like listening to other people's fears for you. It gets like embedded and ingrained. And then that's like what you take over and you're like, oh my God, can I handle this? Like, what if I just grab a beer and start chugging it? Because I had somebody say that to me. And I went for my first shift back and I had no desire to drink.
So it's interesting. That's a part of my story as well. I bartended many, many years into my sobriety. It was the only job I had done in my adult life. It was all I knew how to do. And I'm not going to say that I didn't get a little bit of flack in the 12-step community for doing that, because I did. Mm-hmm. But not, I mean, it didn't bother me, you know, I don't mind getting a little bit of a hard time for doing things my way because I've done it like that my whole life. I've always kind of gone against the grain, not intentionally. It just seems to be who I am, but it also was never a trigger for me either. Like I never, when I was behind the bar, I never felt like I wanted to drink or I needed to drink. I never felt scared that, I mean, I don't even know why I would ever just grab a beer and start drinking it, but I guess maybe for other people it happens that quickly. But I always felt like if I decided to drink again, my geography is not the deciding factor. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't matter if I'm standing behind the bar or in my living room or at the bookstore. Like it doesn't matter where I am. If I decide to drink, I'm going to drink.
And I agree. And that's the whole thing. And it was just like for me too, that restaurant industry, bartending, waitressing, that's all I knew for a very long time. So when I went back into it, it was a quick, easy cash. And I was also too coming out of my addiction and into my sobriety and realizing I was in a job that I was miserable at and actually was more triggering for me than bartending and waiting tables.
Sure. Well, I love that. I had been exposed to other sober bartenders quite a bit in my 20s when I lived in Los Angeles. So it just didn't even seem weird to me. I know it seemed weird in Kansas City because that's where I was when I got sober. But yeah, it wasn't weird to me at all because I had already worked for so many years with sober bartenders. So it was almost more like the natural progression, you know, like you drink as long as you can and then you have to get sober and grow up, you know?
Yeah, well, and two, after I got sober there, then I had a close girlfriend who got sober a month after me. So it was nice to have somebody working there. And the place that I work at, it's like a family. So if I were to ever relapse, my owner, my manager, and a couple people around me would be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I am so vocal about it. And, you know, and I tell customers I'm sober too.
Yeah. You and I were kindred spirits. I was the same way. Like I just never had a moment of anonymity in any way. You know, I was always super open about it, but because I was so proud of it, you know, like I was so proud of myself and I was so proud of the life that I was living and the change that was happening inside of me. Like I just loved all of it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting too, because by the time I quit bartending, I had gone from nightclubs into restaurants, which was a really good and important move for me because before that I had always bartended really high volume nightclubs. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a pivotal moment when I made that transition into a restaurant because it put me on more normal hours, right? So I wasn't getting home at 6 a.m. or 5:30. And it also was in a really nice upscale restaurant. So I still made a lot of money and worked fewer hours. So that was really nice. But by the end, when I was working in the restaurant, there were like five or six other servers that were sober people also. And it was really cool because all the years prior to that, when I was getting sober, there was never any other sober person anywhere I worked. And by the end, it was becoming a much more normal sort of thing. And it was really fun that we all just kind of had our own little club and we could rely on one another. Certainly if there was a tough moment at work or if somebody was in a bad mood, you know, we were our own support system and it was actually really cool. It was very fun.
Right. And it bonds you, you know, and it bonds you. And it's funny this past year at our Christmas party, because now it's like half of the staff is sober. So my manager was like, well, this is going to be a very, an expensive Christmas party. Yeah. And I looked at him. I go, you can thank me for that. You know, just messing with him. But definitely going back, because I did end up leaving the medical field, because that's when I started, you know, realizing like, I do not want to be in this field. I'm not a 9-to-5 person. I want to own my own business. And I started getting into health coaching. So when I did leave the 9-to-5, and go back and pick up a couple days at the bar, I just made sure I had boundaries. Like I just work during the day. You know, there's one night that I work, but I'm out of there by 10 o'clock. So it's like, I just had to put some boundaries up because I did not want to get back into that, what you were just talking about, like the 2 to 3, 4 a.m. of getting going to bed.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't even realize like what an integral part of my leaving that industry that was going to be, you know, just making that little shift. I just got this opportunity to work at a restaurant that's beautiful. I worked at Capital Grille. That was my last bartending job. And I was there for several years. And it was one of my favorite restaurants anyway. And, you know, I was so excited to have the opportunity to work there. But yeah, it was a game changer. And I had no idea in the moment that it was going to be a game changer. But now looking back on it, it was perfect. It was right where I needed to be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about your rock bottom journey. I've been talking a lot more here recently about rock bottom and how that looks different for everyone. And I'm trying to ask a little more often for people to share those stories so people can understand that rock bottom doesn't look the same for everybody, right? Like, you don't have to end up in a situation like I did. I almost killed someone. That's a pretty horrific rock bottom. But what did your rock bottom look like?
So I had about, I don't know, 999 rock bottoms. I had a lot of rock bottoms. You know, if you're still using and you're like, when is my rock bottom going to be my rock bottom? You just actually end up knowing when that last time is. I don't know if it's something like intuitive, but like my last rock bottom was the last night that I worked at the bar, and my boyfriend, who's now my husband, he was like, please don't get all shit-faced tonight. And I was like, okay. You know, of course, telling him okay, but I knew I was going to start doing shots as soon as I got there. So the night progressed. The next morning, I wake up to my best friend saying to me, Fiona, that's our cat that we rescued from legit the streets. She was like, Court, Fiona got out last night. And I was like, no, she's fine. She was like, no, Fiona got out last night. Matt's upset and I'm leaving. I was like, okay. So I'm still drunk. And then I wake up, you know, to her saying that to me. And then Matt comes down the stairs and tells me that Fiona was missing again, because this is now the second time I've lost our cat due to going outside and leaving the screen door open and a blackout to go smoke cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I'm done. Cause at this point we were together for a year and a half living together. I think we moved in like after 6 months of being together. So we're living together at this point now. And he was like, you can continue drinking, but I'm not going to be around for it. He was like, so he let me know that. And he was like, and if we don't ever find the cat, I don't know if I'll ever be able to forgive you. So wow. So a couple, because I mean, him and this cat are like best friends. Like this man loves this little angel. So
I can relate. Henry is on my lap sleeping right now.
Yeah. So a couple days go by, you know, I'm then sitting there with one of the biggest hangovers of my life, going through, you know, a little mini detox, you know, some withdrawals, sitting there just being like, oh my God, if like picturing my cat being hit by a car. And then I have the possibility of my relationship ending, which Matt was the man who changed the game for me when it came to love. Finally, I find Fiona 3 days later. She comes running out of the neighbor's porch, which I had looked for there many times. And this cat comes running out of this porch and I like run to her. She's got leaves all up in her fur. She's got little cobwebs on her nose. And she lets me pick her up and like I just drop to my knees. And when I tell you that that was like a universal / God moment where everything went silent, and I had this cat on me and she kind of like peed on me because she was scared. Aww. And then that's when I made the pact to be like, I found her and it's time to start living a life without alcohol, because this is just going to, it just progressively gets worse. I mean, nothing good came from it when I drank. Right. You know, there's like 90% of the time it was all some type of episode, drama. Waking up in a jail, waking up in a hospital, waking up to a man that I had no idea what his first name was. And, you know, obviously knowing that I had sex with him and just a series of events, and just me and alcohol we were not friends, you know? So I gave up drinking and I've been sober since.
Yeah. I think that's one of the hardest parts to make people understand also, is that it progressively gets worse.
Yes.
You know, so I have all kinds of people and clients who did not drink like I drank. I mean, I drank like a lunatic. It sounds like you and I would have had a really good time together. We wouldn't have remembered it, but it would have happened.
Right.
but you know, when I have clients that don't drink that out of control, I think it's hard for them to understand that I wasn't always that out of control either. Like this thing just grows and gets worse the more you continue to feed it. And there were all kinds of things that I did in my drunken stupor that I never thought I would do. You know, I mean, it's mm-hmm. crazy.
It is crazy. And that's the thing too. It's like going back. So I started drinking at 19, and it starts off something innocent because I'm thinking about like you're 19. It's like, this is what people around you are doing. But then within a couple of years, like I was like, okay, I have a problem, because it was very quickly to drinking to blackout a lot. And I'm a believer of there's all different forms of alcoholism when it comes to your relationship with alcohol.
Yes.
Whether it's a daily drinker or whether it's you go on binges. So towards the end, it was a binge where I could go a couple days, 4 or 5 days without drinking. And then like once it hit my lips, I would just like binge for a couple days, you know, and then again, then go through the hangover cycle, the shame, the guilt, all of that, and then pick up again and use. But it started off innocent, and that is the point with it. It's just like everyone starts this relationship with it and then turns into something very dark. By the age of 25, I knew I was like, I'm going to have to give up drinking one day.
Yeah, I would say by 27, 28, I was pretty clear on that. But I had my first thought of like, I wonder if I'm an alcoholic, mm-hmm. as at 24. And I wasn't anywhere near out of control by then. But what I knew is that I was more attached to it than other people were. Like, mm-hmm. that's all I recognized. I was never a blackout drinker. That was just not a huge part of my story. I didn't drink in the morning. I didn't sit at home and drink. Like, I was depressed. Like, none of that was a part of my story. But I just knew that I liked alcohol more than my friends did. I knew. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be around more than other people did. Like, other people just weren't as connected to it. And that's what I recognized early on. And I did, because I worked in bars, I did drink alcoholically from the beginning, in the sense that I drank pretty much every day. But I didn't have any tolerance, right? Like, I wasn't drinking out of control. Like, drinking every day might have been 3 or 4 beers, maybe. And see, to normal people, that sounds like a lot, but to an alcoholic,
it's nothing.
3 or 4 beers is nothing, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I just knew that there was nothing normal about doing it every day. But I also didn't know all the things it meant to be an alcoholic. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like it had a little more control in my life than I was comfortable with, but I didn't know all the underlying things.
When you stop using and then you gain your clarity, and then you look back at your actions and your relationship with it, that's when you're like, whew,
yes.
I had an issue. And it had more power over me and more control over me than I thought.
Yeah, it is challenging. And hobbies are something I talk with my clients about a lot too, because you really do kind of have to rediscover yourself. You stop doing a lot of things that you once enjoyed. And yeah, it's challenging. Like, you have to figure those things out. I think it's also really imperative that we fill our schedules, right? Like, I cannot sit and spend alone time with my brain, because my brain was not healthy at that stage of the game, you know, so we did not need to be spending alone time together. What has been your most challenging time in your recovery, and how did you get through it without relapse?
My most challenging time is trying to get pregnant. So we have to go through the whole IVF process, the infertility between with couples. It's very, very hard. And it's just challenging because it's a monthly thing where it's disappointment each month.
The emotional part of that.
The emotional part, yes. The emotional part of it. So what I do is I allow myself to feel the feels and really just be okay with that. And in the past year and a half, 2 years, it's gotten better. Plus two, it's like, you know, you want to control everything, and that's where you have to let it go and understand that, like, you cannot control it all. And I had to let that go a year and a half ago. So it's, my process has gotten better, but it's still challenging, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel the feels each month. I allow myself, if I want to cry, I'll cry, instead of holding it all in, thinking that I have to be tough, you know, because that's something that goes back to my childhood of my feelings being dismissed.
Sure.
So I just go through that process. And if I need to eat some ice cream, I will eat some ice cream and some pizza.
Amen to that. That's two of my favorite things right there.
And really, when it comes down to relapsing for me, it's not an option. And it's not an option because I don't have it in me to go back to do those first 90 days sober again. You know, and even before I got sober, I spent a good 4 or 5 years of being like, you know, trying to like, okay, this month I'm not going to do any shots. I'm going to go a week without drinking. I'm going to go 30 days without drinking. Right. I'm going to try to moderate my drinking. Like, it just became so exhausted where it was just finally like, I cannot have alcohol in my life. I am not a person who's able to have a drink and that be okay. That's not me. I wasn't built that way.
Right. And when you're trying to control something and you're putting all those rules around it, when you're trying to control something, it's because you've already lost control. And there's no going back at that point, right? Like, I will never regain control of my drinking, you know, and drink the way I drank when I was 21. Like, that will never happen.
Like, when people do relapse, they tell you where they're like, where it was like, okay, I had a beer or two. And then within a matter of a week or two, I was drinking to the point where I was when I stopped.
Absolutely. And then it just gets worse from there.
Yeah, it just escalates that. It escalates that quickly. So I want to say I don't have the fight in me. I just don't have that energy to go back to that life because it was that terrible.
Yes. Once you get out of that drama and you realize how much drama it was to live like that, no, I'm not going back. I'm definitely not going back for sure.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. And like,
it is exhausting. That's why I every Sunday, it's part of my little morning routine on Sundays. But I like to think of different times where I woke up a night after drinking and put myself back into that situation because that keeps me grounded and it keeps me to wanting to go back to that life.
Yeah. Now, what was your now husband's drinking habits? Like, when you guys got together, it sounds like he did not drink the same way you drank.
No, I was such a bully and a drink pusher to him. No, Matthew liked to have his fun, but he could have a beer or two and stop. And I would look at him and be like, what do you mean?
Right.
What are you partying tonight?
What are like, you doing?
Right. Like, let's do shots. And then, at the time when we both, because he quit drinking with me. So Matt hasn't had a drink in the same amount of time. And he was to the point where he would have two beers and the next day feel like garbage. And he is very artistic. So that messed up his clarity. And he was surrounded by alcoholism his whole life. So he was just to the point where he was like, it's not fun. I mean, when somebody lives in a situation where it's just alcohol is at the forefront of every relationship, like, what fun would drinking be to a person, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So you guys really embarked on this journey together. I mean, he quit drinking with you. That's awesome. I'm sure it was a much different experience for him.
Yeah. So his sobriety looks was different than mine. Like, again, those first 2 years, I was like, couldn't even go out to eat in a restaurant on a Friday night, like without having like panic attacks. He's been cool and casual.
Right.
Right. It's been very different, but I'm lucky and fortunate to have somebody to have supported me through that. But it was also to an adjustment for his and I's relationship. As soon as him and I got sober, it was like starting at day one in a relationship with it was a completely new relationship.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about too, is like, how did it affect your relationship? Because then obviously even like date nights are going to look very different at that stage of it too. Like, how did you guys navigate some of those challenges?
It just, you know, like, we did a lot of coffee dates in the beginning. There was a lot of Starbucks of just kind of sitting in Starbucks and hanging out or getting a coffee and going to this downtown area and just sitting on a park bench and hanging out. And that's actually one night he told me, I think we were about 3 to 4 months into our sobriety and we hung out on a park bench and just like people watching drink coffee. And he told me that he knew that was the night that he wanted to marry me. But, you know, movies and then exploring our city with just you know, museums, stuff to do. So, but then there was a lot of time sitting at home too, and just being comfortable with sitting at home.
Yes.
You know, and then like going into like, and then for me, and then like the whole sober sex thing, that was a whole adjustment for me, because I used my body. I was always drunk majority of the times I had sex. So that was totally new.
Yeah. That is an interesting twist. And I get asked about it every once in a while. I think it's almost strange how little people ask about it. And I think probably because most people are just uncomfortable talking about sex in general, but I don't remember having a struggle, like being uncomfortable having sex in sobriety, but I know a lot of people talk about that. Mm-hmm. Now, do you feel like you were, because obviously drinking takes away all anxiety, it lowers your inhibition. Like, I get where the challenges could come from. Did you feel like you were insecure, or did you feel like you were more vulnerable because you were sober? Like, what was the discomfort in that situation?
I think both. I mean, because then it just makes you, again, this is why I watch reality television at night, because you have to shut your brain off at some point. And like the self-awareness, the constant self-awareness that you have as a, me being a sober woman, it's constant self-awareness. And it gets exhausting. So to answer your question, it was both of those. I was super insecure, because then it's like something that goes back to, again, to realizing I was just always constantly trying to feel loved through sex. I saw attention from men in this through sex, and that's how I thought I was going to be loved. And attention from men, you know, so it was a very unhealthy way. And then I used sex as like a weapon to get what I wanted from men. So it was just a very uncomfortable thing. And then I put on a lot of weight my first year of sobriety. So then too, like even being naked and having sex, like I was just uncomfortable with myself.
Right.
Now I have no problem, because I'm very comfortable with myself. And, you know, I just like, and it's a good thing. It's a very good thing to be comfortable with yourself as a woman.
Yeah.
And to look at yourself and be like, I love her, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not saying everything's perfect, but at least like loving yourself and just having that self-respect.
And I so appreciate your candor in talking about those things. And I can relate to so many things that you said, you know, like always, it was always for me also very much craving that attention. And it's really easy to get a guy's attention when you're in high heels and a short skirt, and you know, and you have that sexuality. Like one of my girlfriends said a long time ago, she's like, you lead with your sexuality, like you lead with your body. And I was like, oh, I never thought of it like that. But I totally get where she was coming from now, because I was always in the sexiest outfit and always had my hair and makeup done. Like that's what I relied on to get attention. And I didn't realize, of course, that what that brought me was all the wrong kind of attention and all the wrong kind of guys, you know?
Right. And then that leads you just to sit there the next day and feel, again, you getting into the shame cycle, and then like embarrassed and like, oh my God, like another person to my list of men who I've had sex with, where I don't even remember half their names, but I could tell you what bar I met them at. You know, it's just like stuff like that. So it's just like, so by the time when I said Matt was a game changer in my relationship with men and that love that he had for me and showed me and respect, I still had some patterns from previous relationships that bled a little bit into that. So it was just all about changing. It's just, you got to change some of these behaviors that you do, you know?
Yeah. And I always talk about, I had a whole separate dating rock bottom. And I was 4 years sober, and I realized at 4 years sober, I literally was dating like one of the worst people I had ever picked. Mm-hmm. And you know, he was a charismatic, super successful guy, but he was alcoholic, drug addict. His life was out of control. He was a hot mess. He was a liar and a cheater. And I mean, it was crazy. And I sat down one night when he, you know, lied to me again and blew me off again. And I was sitting in my living room and I was like, what the heck am I doing? Like, I'm doing all this work on myself and I've gotten so much better as a human being in my sobriety. But why am I still dating the same type of guy that I dated when I was drunk and my own hot mess, right? And it was just its whole other rock bottom moment where I was like, damn, Angela, you got to dig deep and figure this out. This is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I want in my life anymore. You know, where when I was more broken, I accepted that behavior because I was broken too, right?
Right.
But as I was healing, I recognized that I wanted and I deserved something better. But 99% of that took place inside of me. That was fixing me and the choices I made in men and dating, because I made a lot of dumb choices, you know?
Right.
And yeah, I always picked the same type of person. So I went through a whole transformation with that too. And I got really clear on, it's fascinating too. So I sat down and I made a list of all the qualities I wanted in my dream partner, right? Mm-hmm. And as I read down that list, what I recognized was I wasn't a single one of those things.
Interesting.
And I thought, how can I want this out of my partner if I'm not bringing this to the table? You know? So my focus shifted to becoming all those things on my list, you know, and it really was an incredible journey. But a lot of it was building my self-esteem and becoming more independent, meaning really getting into entrepreneurship and being my own boss and starting to navigate out of bartending and service industry and really becoming the woman and the adult that I wanted to be in my sobriety. And, but yeah, it was just an interesting process, but it was its whole separate rock bottom from drinking.
That's what I mean. It's like, it's just because you stop using, you stop drinking, does not mean that your life, it like gets perfect. That's
right.
Where you have to do the work and like what you realized that 4 years sober, you know, and me and my husband have had to do couples therapy. I mean, which I recommend for everybody. It's wonderful, but it's like, we had to get really uncomfortable in situations to move past things and then move forward, you know, and really growing, into each other and what we are now, because we're not the same people that we were when we met, you know, and his growth and my growth, it's been amazing to watch, but also two hard times to go through, you know?
Sure. So. Yeah. And it is like, when I think back on it, like by the time I was 4 years sober, I had 20 years of dating, right? Yeah. So just because I got sober didn't mean 20 years of habits were going to magically dissipate and I was going to magically do it differently, right? Yeah. Like all those behaviors take a lot. You know, in AA, we say, what do you have if you sober up a horse thief? Like, well, you just have a sober horse thief, right? Because just because the dude stops drinking doesn't mean he's all of a sudden not going to be a horse thief. Like you stay the same. And that's really the process of recovery, is uncovering all that stuff and really getting to shift your thinking patterns and your behaviors so you can create that life that you really dream of.
Yeah. And which that's a good point to make. And I don't think my behaviors and all that didn't start shifting until year three. It takes you a little bit to really unchange the patterns that you have been living when you're your sober self, you know?
Yeah. My first year sober was really, I was 100% in survival mode.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in the way that I was fighting cravings and wanting to drink, because I didn't really have that. I mean, I quit drinking and I was resolute in my decision to not drink anymore. And you couldn't have paid me $1 million to drink. I knew that was over. But I had a lot of legal stuff that was hanging over my head. Mm-hmm. And it was really just getting my feet on the ground in this new life and getting through. I always say, I feel like you have to get through all the seasons. as a sober person, right? Because all the different seasons bring all their different things. It's different holidays and celebrations and activities. And it, I really was just in survival mode. Like I was just getting through and I was really committed to the 12-step program, right? And that's where I had all my friends and I loved it. I had so much fun there. And it was really not until much after that. But I will say too, in that first year, I learned a lot of really good foundation things. Like I started showing up on time, which was really big for me because I had never been on time for anything because I was always hungover and laying around too long. Uh-huh. So I learned to be on time and I learned how to be committed to something because the only thing I had ever been committed to in my life was drinking. And now all of a sudden I had this whole new thing to nurture and protect and take care of in my sobriety. And it became very important to me and I wanted to be committed to my sobriety. So that was a little foundation kind of change. I also learned to listen. That was a really big one for me. And just sitting in an AA meeting every day and being really quiet and being really engaged, actively listening as people were sharing their stories and having so much respect for those people. So I did have changes. They were just really foundational things to build a strong foundation for the rest of my sobriety. But they were all really good and valuable.
Well, I mean, just being just sitting there alone and being quiet and listening and not giving your opinion. Do you know what I mean? Like that
so
is
huge.
Growth.
Yes.
It really is because you do have to sit and listen to people and being like, okay, like these, you know, people are a lot like me, especially in 12-step programs. I mean, it's this, it's all the same. It's just looks different for everybody.
Yeah.
But it's the same type of, you know, where this alcohol or drugs controlled our lives and it led us nowhere good.
That's the truth. What is your favorite ritual that you practice that's a part of your sober journey and protecting your sobriety?
Meditation. Meditation is the number one thing that I can really say has helped me with my growth. I did it years ago. I started, Deepak and Oprah used to do these 21-day free meditation ones. So I started with that and I was like, oh my God, like this is sitting here for 20 minutes, you know, in silence, it's terrible. And then when I got out of my 9-to-5 job, I did do about 6 months where I would, you know, because I had freedom of like sleeping in and not having to get up at 5 a.m. So I did about 6 months of watching live with Kelly and I think Michael was her partner at the time. So I did that and like just lounged around for 6 months. And then I was like, I'm not starting to feel good, you know? So I switched it around and I just said, I'm going to get my morning routine on point. And I started meditating. And then it wasn't until this past year where I made meditation a daily practice. So prior to it, I was doing it like 3-4 years, but I would only do it like Monday and Friday because I didn't want to seem like so uptight and like, you know, I wanted to live a little and go outside the lines on the weekends. And then it was a year ago, I hired a mindset coach and he was like, you've got to meditate every day. And I have not missed a day since.
Oh, I love that.
But that really, and the biggest compliment my sister said to me one time, she was like, you don't react anymore.
Right. Yes.
She's like, what happened to you? And I was like, dude, I'm telling you, it's meditation. I was like, don't react in my feelings anymore. I press pause. And honestly, like if you get a text from somebody or somebody says something to piss you off, it's like, you don't have to respond right then and there. Think about it for 24 hours and then respond because you don't ever want to say something that's going to get like where you're going to feel bad about it in the end. And I've been in so many of those situations where it's just like react, react, react. So meditation really has helped me chill and not react to things. It helps so much.
Yeah, it's huge. I love meditation. It's a game changer also. It's so good for you. And really just to accomplish anything, but it does make you more calm. And it also, I feel like, gets you much more clear on your vision of your life, your day, who you are, how you want to be, you know, all those things you get much more clear on.
And it has really helped my anxiety, because in my recovery, a lot of anxiety, panic attacks came up. So that has helped me huge. Like, I now only pinpoint my anxiety, and sorry to the guys who are listening, but I only, like, my anxiety now only comes up around my period. And it's either right before or right after where I have a little anxiety and I'm like, okay, cool. But before that, it was like, you know, first 2-3 years, I was living every day with anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a huge difference.
It does.
Okay. Final question, favorite question.
Oh, yes.
What is your favorite thing about being a sober person?
Oh, man. I like that question. My favorite thing about being a sober person, I just love life. I really do. I love living. And I guess I have like that zest for life, because for so long, and especially those last 5 years of my active addiction, I mean, I was slowly killing myself. It was a gamble every day with picking up the bottle. And, you know, I did have a couple suicide attempts in my active addiction. So it's like, to really remember myself and the feeling I had back then to the feeling I'm having talking to you right now, it's just like, I'm just excited to be alive every day.
Yeah.
So, and I think that that too, it's come with clarity. It's come with clarity in my sobriety. It's come with doing the work on myself and just, you know, getting my healing myself of past traumas, childhood traumas. That's my favorite thing. I mean, also too, just being able to sit here and talk to you and being casual and having a conversation with somebody new I've never talked to before. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and we got this sisterhood here of like, you get it when you have become sober from addiction, whatever addiction it is, it's like when you talk to another sober person, you just look at them or talk to them like this. And it's just you, it's a sisterhood, a brotherhood, like you just get it. And you understand how hard it is to overcome this.
We definitely connect with one another in a very different way than we connect with other people. That's for sure.
Yes.
Well, Courtney, thank you so much for doing this episode with me and sharing your story. I appreciate it. I will put all the links of how to find Courtney in the show notes, along with all of our regular links to My Recovery Toolbox and to join the Facebook group. Everything will be in the show notes, so you can just click right from your podcast app. I hope you guys are having a fantastic day, and I will see you next week.
You've reached the end of another great episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast, candid and honest conversation about addiction and recovery. Be sure to visit us at addictionunlimited.com to join the conversation and access show notes and links to everything we talked about. Love this episode? Please take 30 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes to help us improve and give you the information you want. Thanks for listening. See you next week.